Welcome to Raising Connections. I'm your host, Rayshan Mayer. This is the program where we talk about your critters, companions, commerce, and agriculture, and all of the connections between them. This morning is my favorite broadcast. It's the scrapbook of 2024 and some of the most interesting conversations we've had all year, and by no means all of the interesting conversations we've had this year. Let's get started with Ellie Bondi from the Mount Airy Disaster Relief Committee talking about how disaster relief groups make a difference in our small communities.
How did the Disaster Relief Fund come to be?
There exists a group of townhouses off of Backacre Circle in Mount Airy. A fire happened on a deck in one of those townhouses. I believe it was November, right around Thanksgiving of 2005. And although the townhouses themselves were built with fire breaks in between each house, the decks were not. So the wind took the fire from deck to deck to deck. And I think there were five in that unit, and they all were decimated by the fire. At the beginning, it was the fire fund. It was a fund initiated by another resident of a neighboring townhouse who came into the community and said, we need some people to be part of a fundraising group. And then after that fire and after those people had been rehomed and backed into their burned out places, the group decided in 2007 that we needed to continue to be a group. We had a bank that was willing to partner with us, and we became a 501c3 nonprofit and renamed as Mount Airy Disaster Relief Fund, designed to aid individuals in the greater Mount Airy area who have been affected by an unforeseen event, such as tree falling on the house, a fire, a flood. Believe it or not, we don't have lots of water around, but we have had a flooded home in Mount Airy.
Water can be meaningful.
Because the creek grows.
Yes, we live near a creek. I can appreciate it rising.
This was near the Twin Arch Bridge. So that's what we've been doing. One of the things that I'm very proud of, the fact that we partner with that bank. To give you an example, there was a home that was burned. A family went for a walk and the house happened to catch fire while they were gone. And it was totally unlivable. The community wanted to support that family. And instead of establishing a GoFundMe, because GoFundMe is a business and takes a percentage.
Absolutely. I don't think a lot of people realize that.
Yes. And that's one of the things we try to educate everybody in town about, the fact that this bank, because they partner with our nonprofit, will hold the money.
So if local banks are amazing. I'm going to plug local banks here.
Yes.
Because the national banks don't have the capacity to do that.
Yes.
They are held to different, I'm not sure if it's rules or regulations, but they have a different opportunity, different vision. And those local banks really came in to this space.
Yeah.
I'm going to ask you to say it again. GoFundMe is a business.
Yes, it is. And a business has expenses. They have to pay people. They have to rent space. And therefore, they take a percentage of the money. Again, we've heard some horror stories where somebody thought they had $20,000 in a GoFundMe. And when they got the money, they realized that it was about two-thirds of that.
Wow.
They take a lot. I don't have specific figures. So the benefit of our program is that this family that needed money, the amount $20,000 came into my mind because that's how much the community gave for this family. And the fact that the family didn't really need it until the house was rebuilt because it had been insured. The insurance rebuilt the house, but they needed it for furniture and the details that you need.
The goods of living.
Yes.
The goal of Raising Connections is to feature critters, companions, commerce, and agriculture. Lochmoy Farm and Carolyn McIntosh talks about where Lochmoy comes from and what the goal is, and one of the most important things, if you are not involved with horses, how you can become involved and learn more and find out if this is something you might want to do as a volunteer.
What is Lochmoy Farm?
Lochmoy is from the McIntosh Homestead in Scotland. Loch is lake and moy is flat plain. So that's what Lochmoy means. So what we do at Lochmoy is we have dressage, show jumping, cross country. We run events under Maryland Horse Trials. We also run dressage shows. The property is bordered by the Monocacy River, which provides really awesome trail riding. Unfortunately, I can't make my courses any bigger because of the river. We also have a cross-country schooling course where it's open year-round.
Is this also your home?
Yes.
You have a very loyal group of volunteers. Some of the most loyal volunteers I've ever seen. And this is not a small group of people.
Oh, just last year alone, we had over 350 volunteers. Some of them volunteer for almost every event.
The events that you have, you're hosting close to 30 events a year.
Correct.
How do you keep these volunteers together? What is your magic?
Number one, we set up a system called Eventing Volunteers, where you can go and sign up to volunteer. All the events are listed. And that way we keep track of your hours and you get great benefits the more hours that you volunteer.
What does a volunteer do at an event? Does it depend on the event?
Well, let's say you sign up to scribe for a dressage judge.
That's, okay, describe me. I'm sitting at the desk writing.
Yes, you are okay. Sitting at the desk and you're writing just what the judge says. It's not hard. You just write. If you're a dressage writer, it's a great way to get a lesson. So that's what you do if you do scribing. Then if you're a cross-country score runner, you hop on a four-wheeler and go around the course and pick up scores from all the cross-country jump judges.
I'm assuming you have to be 16 or older for that position.
For that, you need a driver's license.
Got it.
Then we do have dressage score running where you just walk from hut to hut and pick up scores. Other jobs include cross-country warm-up where you sit and you check the riders in as they come in to school, the jumps that are set up before they go out on course. And then you can be a starter where you start them at the start box. You just do a countdown for them, wish them well. And I've got just great people that do start and they enjoy it and they're friendly. Everybody is friendly. That's the key word. Everybody is welcome. Everybody.
Maryland has a little bit of everything. The tourism and aquaculture of Ocean City is live and well. Do you know how much the population grows in the summer? Do you have any idea why the roofs on the lighthouses are red? We have a lot of answers for you.
Did you know that the population of Ocean City year-round is 6,844 people in 1,510 square miles? The summer population goes to 320,000 to 345,000. The water, the salt air, the sand produces the seafood and the fun that we expect. But let's start off with that water, the color, the air, the sound, the danger, and go into the Ocean City Life-Saving Museum. Because as beautiful as the water is, it's incredibly dangerous and changes what we think of Ocean City. The building that currently houses the Life-Saving Museum was formerly a Coast Guard building and provided supports in various capacities to the community as it's moved through town to its current location near the pier. The red brick color of the roof gives a contrast to the surroundings, and that's how, at least one local legend says, the color of the lighthouse roofs become red. Let's go back in history, starting with the logbooks. The logbook is from the Ocean City, Maryland Life Saving Station from the period of December 26th, just after Christmas, 1878 to January 22nd, 1880. And it contains a daily record of weather conditions, times, and directions, the surfman's patrols, shipwrecks, and the account of rescues performed by keeper William T. West and crew of the Ocean City Station. It's a gift of William Wimbrough. If you could see this, the entry and the cursive writing speaks of a different day and a different time. What was a day in the life at the coast like? What was it like to be a lifesaver on duty? Tuesday, September 23rd, 1879. This day commences with winds from the north, wet and over east. Surf is very high. And then a sunset. Finish has been from the west-southwest. Weather is overcast. Surf is going down. The life car, which was deployed to bring shipwreck victims in, or folks that had been become stranded, almost looks like something that belongs on a roller coaster. You put yourself in, you hold on tight, seal the lid, and you get pulled in. The life car is a rare piece of early rescue equipment. The breeches buoy is used to rescue people from a shipwrecked vehicle. If the wreck was close to the beach, a line was fired to the ship. The breeches buoy was then sent out to the vessel in distress. Once the person is placed in the breeches buoy, the whip line is used to pull the breeches buoy back to shore. This maneuver will be repeated until all of those on board are taken from the shipwreck. The present-day inlet was created during the hurricane of 1933. A storm cut a swath through the lowest-lying portion of the island, and within 24 hours, a new and much-needed inlet had opened. With each changing tide, the opening grew wider, and the state of Maryland was soon working and installed a jetty system, guaranteeing that Ocean City would have a path to the seaway. The 1933 hurricane devastated many structures in the south end of the city. The buildings would collapse in the new inlet in several days. The storm virtually wiped out the poundfish industry, which was the backbone of the local
local economy. It did, however, cause to be created the sport fish industry, and the town of Ocean City is today, and has been for many years, known as the white marlin capital of the world. In the 1960s, when everybody was having fun out in California, the Ocean City area wasn't forgotten. Surfing regained its popularity in Ocean City in 1964 when the first surf shop, the Eastern Surfer, opened in the basement of Sandy Hill Motel on 18th Street. The most popular board was around 30 pounds. Remember seeing the pictures of people taking those boards and running to the ocean? In the museum, one of my favorite quotes is, "There are no more committed people on the planet than surfers. We fall down a lot, we turn around, paddle back out, and do it over and over. Unlike anything else in life, the stake of surfing is so high that failures quickly fade from memory." Gary Sirota, surfer.
We'll be right back and continue this conversation. Join me, Rayshan Mayer, from Mariah Bell Manor Kennel, for our new adventure, Living Life Tails Up podcast, combining everyday life with what goes on at the kennel and farm, a bit of humor, some ideas, and some positive happy bubbles. We're living tails up, nose down, and staying on track. We hope to see you on Living Life Tails Up for 5 to 10 minutes worth of happy, happy bubbles shooting out there in the atmosphere. See you soon.